hanging from the ceiling. Each circular orb was worth a small fortune, and it was said that they never stopped giving off light. Of course, only a fool would think that. After all, nothing lasted forever. Still, he could appreciate how expensive they must have been, and he'd heard of more than one incident when a particularly brave or foolish thief had attempted to steal one despite the fact that the ceilings were at least 30 feet high, and that May, the club's owner, was known for the quality of guards she kept on her payroll. All around the room, the tables were packed with people who talked, laughed, flirted or argued, as they each enjoyed their own brand of relaxation. Many smoked on pipes or cigars, so that the air was filled with a constantly shifting curtain of grey haze. On a large raised platform in the center of the room, a woman in a skimpy dress and top sang a bawdy song about a sailor who was caught by a mermaid and forced to perform certain favors for her before she'd set him free. The singer's voice was off-key, but she looked good enough in her red dress and high boots that no one seemed to notice, and even the women in the audience clapped and cheered her on. Aaron had to push his way through a crowd of people as he headed for the bar. Finally, he made it to the counter and nodded to the bartender. She had emerald green eyes and the type of body that men usually only saw in their dreams. Though she looked to be no older than 20 or 21 years, Aaron knew her to be, in fact, in her early 40s, and the blue silk dress she wore revealed even more than the singer's. He suspected that the guards earned their keep, just convincing the male clientele to keep their hands to themselves. The woman noticed him and smiled, revealing a set of perfect pearly white teeth. "Well, my, my! If it isn't the Silent Blade himself!" Aaron grunted.
"Celeste?"
"The Silent Blade?" Grial asked curiously, pushing his way beside Aaron. "Does it refer to your stealth in combat?" The bartender let out a girlish laugh and ran a hand through her long blonde hair. "I don't know much about fighting, hun, but our friend here does everything silent." She winked at the chubby man. "And I do mean everything." Aaron sighed as Grial's face turned a deep, embarrassed red. The chamberlain tried to reply, but his words came out as stuttered, incomprehensible sounds, and Celeste laughed throatily.
"You're cute."
Aaron hadn't thought it possible, but the man's face managed to go an even deeper, angrier crimson. "Still," the bartender said, as she draped her arm around Aaron, "I'm a one-man woman, and I'm already taken. Aren't I, sugar?" He swallowed hard, conscious of the firm softness of her pressing against him.
"You know I'm not good enough for you, Celeste."
She grinned and spun in a circle with the grace of a dancer before leaning forward and kissing him on the lips.
"Maybe not, sugar," she said as she leaned back, "but you'll do until the good gets here."
Aaron laughed despite himself.
"Is there a reason why we're here?" Adina asked, scowling.
"Uh-oh," Celeste said, grinning mischievously as she glanced between the two of them.
"Now don't tell me you've been cheating on me, Silent. Why, I think my heart would break from the strain of it."
He smiled. "Of course not. You know me better than that, Celeste. She's just my employer."
"Right," Adina snarled. "And as such, I think it's about time we got down to business, don't you?"
He glanced over at her face, saw the anger flashing in her bright blue eyes, and his smile died.
"You're right."
When he turned back, the barmaid's eyebrow was raised in silent question, but he ignored it.
"Celeste, I've run into a bit of a snag, and I need some information. Is Lucius in?"
The blonde frowned.
"I don't know why you waste your time with that bastard, Silent. He's a world-class weasel if there ever was one."
Aaron grunted in acknowledgement. "Easier for him to keep his nose to the ground, then." The truth was, Lucius was a weasel, the kind of guy that made you want to wash your hands just by talking to him. He was also a world-class liar who would sell out his own mother if he thought he could make a profit off the deal. Still, there was no denying that the man knew almost everything that went on in the Downs. Celeste sighed and pursed her lips in a pout.
"Well, if you would rather spend time with that gutter trash than me, that's your affair. You'll find him at his usual table."
She gestured disgustedly at the far end of the room.
"Oh, and Silent," she said as Aaron started to turn.
"Yes."
"Are you all right?" she asked, her expression one of concern.
"You seem different."
"I'm fine, Celeste. Thanks for asking." He pushed his way through the crowd, thinking of the brothers again, and of Flynn, all the men who had died, in some way, because of him. "That's bullshit," he thought angrily. "Stop screwing around in my head, Firefly." "That wasn't me," Co answered. "But you must not think that way. It wasn't your fault. You didn't kill those men." "I know it wasn't my fault," he muttered angrily. "And who cares if it was? Who were they to me?"
"Did you say something?" the princess asked beside him, and Aaron shook his head, glad of the noise made by the people too drunk to know or care that they were making asses of themselves and others who were doing their level best to get that way as quickly as possible. He would really have to watch that. The last thing he needed was for someone to figure out that he had the orb. He had plenty of people wanting him dead already, many more, and they'd have to form a line and make appointments. He weaved through the crowd of people, pipe smoke parting around him like a curtain of graveyard fog, and he finally spotted the table he'd been searching for. "Stay here," he said to the princess and the chamberlain. "This will only take a minute." Adina eyed him for a moment, but finally nodded, and he turned and walked up to the semicircle booth. "Hello, Lucius." The small man sat in between two scantily clad women, smiling. Their breasts were pressed provocatively against his shoulders as they leaned in and whispered something into his ear. The women were young, 18 or 19 at most, and their eyes held only a small portion of the apathetic disillusionment that could always be found in the gazes of hired women, as if they still retained some of their innocence. Innocence, Aaron thought, a rare thing in the Downs. Rare and expensive. He wondered idly how Lucius, a small-time crook, could afford such company. It wasn't by his looks, that was certain. Celeste hadn't been far wrong when she had called the man a weasel. His nose was long and pointed, giving his face a stretched look, and his smile revealed a set of crooked, pointy teeth. As he turned to Aaron, he ran a hand through long black hair, lank with sweat and grease.
"Well, if it isn't my dear friend Silent. How do you fare in these remarkable times?"
Aaron frowned. Lucius was a notorious coward, and the fact that he didn't seem the least bit put off by the sellsword's arrival didn't bode well.
"I think you know. Send the hirelings away, Lucius." The greasy man gasped in mock surprise. "You must be kidding. These are my two cousins, only recently arrived from the cold north. Why, what kind of man would I be if I were to fail in my duties to warm them with good cheer and better company?"
Aaron growled, out of patience. While he was wasting his time with this asshole, those men were no doubt combing the streets in search of him and the others, and it was only a matter of time before they came here. The women squealed in surprise as he reached across the table and jerked the greasy man out of their arms. Glasses of wine toppled, staining the table a crimson red, and Lucius squeaked, rat-like, as Aaron dragged him across the table.
"Let's try this again," he snarled, leaning down to look at the suddenly pale man's eyes. "Someone tried to dust me today, Lucius. Quite a few someones, actually, and I'm betting you know something about it."
"Let him go."
Aaron turned and saw two men scowling at him, their hands fisted at their sides. Tattoos ran up and down their massive arms in dark spirals. Their heads were shaved bald, and their noses and ears looked like little more than malformed balls of clay on their faces, the marks of any long-time street turf. All in all, they had a fearsome, brutal appearance, one that wouldn't win them any beauty contests, but did add a certain amount of credibility to their experience in their chosen profession. He glanced back and saw that a small crowd had begun to gather around the princess and chamberlain, most likely in the hopes of seeing a fight. He frowned. The last thing he needed was to attract attention. But there was no help for it. He turned to the man who'd spoken.
"Let him go."
"That's right," the bruiser said, cracking his knuckles. "Before we make you."
Aaron slung the little man back across the table in disgust and turned to face the two men fully.
"You don't mean to tell me you work for this little bastard?"
The man shrugged.
"It's a job, and the pay is good. Besides, one arsehole's not so much different than another."
Aaron sighed. "Well, I guess that's true. But listen, there are some questions that I really, really need to ask your employer, all right? So if you'll give me just a minute, I promise to leave him mostly alive when I'm done with him."
The man shook his head.
Not gonna happen. Best leave while your legs can still carry you, little man.
Aaron grinned.
Little man, huh?
Not something he was called often. He was 6'3" and 190 pounds, but considering the fact that both of the men were about twice his size, he guessed it made sense for them to think so. Still, it wasn't something that a man enjoyed hearing. He felt the familiar, cold anger that had driven him his entire life beginning to assert itself.
"There is no reason to fight these men," Ko said into his mind. "After all, so what if the man does know something? What use could it be? You already know that men hunt you and the princess. What possible knowledge could this man possess that would make it worth it?"
Aaron nodded slowly. It was a good point, as far as it went. Of course, that would mean letting the slimy bastard get the better of him.
"You see, Silent," Lucius said smugly, unaware of Aaron's battling thoughts, as he leaned back and took a calm sip from the only wine glass still standing.
"I won't be your whipping boy any more. I've got friends now. You'll have to find someone else to push around." Aaron met the man's gaze, and Lucius looked away, his smile twitching nervously. Aaron forced himself to take a deep, calming breath.
"You're right," he thought, at the virtue. "What would we benefit from forcing a fight here?"
"Exactly," came the virtue's satisfied response. Aaron popped his neck and turned back to the two hired men.
"So there's really no way I can talk you two guys out of it?"
The men shook their heads in unison.
"Not going to happen," said the talkative one.
Aaron shrugged. "Well, you can't fault a man for asking."
"Of course not," the man said, with a sympathetic nod.
Aaron glanced back at the fidgeting Lucius once more, then over to the princess and Chamberlain, who were both shaking their heads. He sighed heavily.
"Well, all right then. I'll go. Maybe another time, when the money runs out."
The bruiser nodded, watching him warily.
"When the money runs out."
Aaron stepped past the two men and noticed that the gathering crowd was still relatively small. Apparently, the possibility of a fight wasn't enough to lure many of the club's patrons away from watching the singer's performance.
"There's no reason to fight here," he told himself for the second time.
"No reason at all, except pride. And pride never fed a starving man, as Dad used to say. Best to let it lie. Best to just..."
"There's just one problem," he said, stopping.
"Oh?" the big man said, turning.
"What's that?" "The truth is, I've always been a pretty prideful man, and I've never needed a fucking reason."
The men were bigger than Aaron, stronger, but they were slower, too. By the time they realized what he was doing, he was already inside their reach, kneeing the Silent One between the legs as hard as he could. The man let out a broken cry and crumpled to the ground, gripping his crotch with two massive hands. A woman in the crowd screamed, but Aaron barely heard. The talkative one swung at him with a paw as big as a shovel, surprisingly fast, and the sellsword only just managed to sidestep the blow. He bumped into the table, scattering trays of food, caught his balance, and grabbed the first thing he could, a toppled wine bottle. The man rushed forward, reaching for him with arms as big as tree trunks, but Aaron lunged to the side, away from the hired man's grasping hands, and swung the bottle into the man's face with all the force he could muster. Glass shattered, and wine flew as the bruiser stumbled backward, bellowing curses and pawing at the pieces of bloody glass sticking out of his face. Before he could recover, Aaron stepped forward and kicked him in the shin, hard. The street tough howled in pain and stumbled into a spectator who'd gotten too close to the show, knocking him over as he tried to comfort his leg and bloody face at the same time. The tough was so preoccupied that he didn't look up at Aaron's approach. With a burst of movement, Aaron grabbed the man's head in both hands and slammed it down on the heavy oak table with a resounding crash. The man's head rebounded off the table, and he dropped to the ground like a poleaxed calf. Aaron grunted, satisfied, and turned back to the table. Lucius whimpered quietly, pushing himself farther back against the seat cushion, as if trying to disappear into its surface. Aaron noted, absently, that the two high-priced hookers had vanished. Innocent maybe, but not stupid.
"Now then," he said, "are you going to start talking, or do you need some motivation?"
I spent a small fortune on those two bastards, Lucius whined, as if overcome at the injustice in the world. A fortune!
Aaron walked over to the bruiser that was still conscious, writhing on the floor, and kicked him in the face, hard. The man's eyes rolled up into his head, and he slipped into unconsciousness. The sellsword turned back to Lucius with a cold smile.
You paid too much.
The small man held up his hands, placating.
I don't know anything, he said, spit flying from his mouth in his haste. I don't know what you want, man.
Aaron reached across the table and half-heartedly smacked him across the face with the back of his hand.
Try again, Lucius. There's not a thing in the Downs that happens without your knowing it, and a hit like the one I've got on me? That's damn sure caused some talk.
The man's mouth worked for a moment before he spoke.
You're wrong, man, okay?
He said, his tone pleading.
I don't know nothing about it.
Wrong answer, Aaron said, reaching for one of the blades at his side.
All right,
Lucius squealed, his eyes so wide they looked as if they were about to pop out of his head.
Fine, I'll tell you.
I never doubted you would. While you're at it, why don't you tell me how a small-time, no-account asshole like you gets hold of enough money to hire two high-priced streeties and these two thugs? Oh, and Lucius? It's been a long day, and I'm in a shitty mood. You really don't want to end up on the wrong end of it.
The weasel-faced man nodded nervously.
Look, it wasn't my fault, okay, Silent? You've got to believe me. This guy comes by my place, wakes me up out...
When?
The small man shook his head.
Last night. But this guy, he tells me that there's a price of 5,000 gold on your head. Tells me to spread it round the Downs. Says that if I don't, he'll split me from ear to ear. Send me to bed early. You know what I mean?
Aaron grunted, surprised by the large sum. He knew most of the blades for hire in the Downs, and although he wouldn't call any of them friends, there was an unwritten code among them that they all tried to keep out of each other's way as much as their professions would allow. Of course, 5,000 large was more than enough to make a man forget that kind of thing.
Go on.
Come on, man. Silent, there's nothing else, okay? I had to do what the man said. You see that, don't you? I mean, he would have killed me.
The sellsword grabbed a fistful of the man's shirt and jerked him over the table.
Don't you fucking lie to me, Lucius. What do you think, I'm stupid? I'm supposed to believe you just stumbled on a pot of gold on your way to Hales. Is that it?
Hale was one of the major crime lords in the Downs, and Lucius his boss. He was a disgustingly fat man who'd grown rich off of other people's suffering. Not that Aaron blamed him for that. After all, everyone in the Downs, no, the world, did the same thing. Hale was just better at it than most.
Of course not, Lucius protested. I wouldn't lie to you, Silent. Man, you gotta know that.
What I know is that you'd lie to the gods themselves if you thought you'd get away with it. Now start talking before I lose my patience.
It's not like that, Silent, I swear, the small man squeaked. Look, when I woke up and that guy was just there, I was scared, okay? Scared shitless. But, well, he seemed like he really wanted you, you know? Said that you had something he wanted, but he wouldn't say what.
Aaron frowned at that, and the small man swallowed hard before continuing.
Anyway, I figured that the man wanted you bad enough that he wouldn't kill me for maybe, you know, seeing if there was something in it for me.
I swear by Illidan and the rest, it's a miracle that someone hasn't laid you horizontal before now, Aaron said, with genuine wonder in his voice. A man wakes you up with a knife at your throat, and you try to blackmail him?
No, Lucius protested, shaking his head vigorously. Not blackmailed. I sold a service, that's all. Not any different than those high and mighty merchants up on God's Row.
You sold me out, is what you did, Lucius, Aaron said, his voice low and dangerous. Sold me out and nearly got me killed in the process.
No, I didn't. You gotta believe me, the weasel-faced man squealed.
He glanced up in the sellsword's face, saw the anger there, and spoke quickly, as if Aaron was contemplating killing him, which of course he was.
I took the man's money, sure. What better way to throw him off your trail? I wasn't going to tell him anything, Silent, but better that he keeps paying me for doing nothing than finding someone else who actually would put the word out, right?
Oh, I get it. So you were actually out to help me, is that it? All those armed men weren't hitters, huh? Just some men out to pay us a visit. Had a few blades they wanted to sell us.
Lucius avoided his gaze.
Well, something went wrong. The guy started getting really anxious, you know. No, not anxious. Crazy. Crazy as those priests of death are.
A few people in the crowd whispered at that. The priests of death, also known as the Reapers, though not to their face, were men and women who dedicated their lives to Salin's dark purpose, experimenting on the terminally sick and abducting the unwary to be used in their twisted rituals. Of course, many believed that they were nothing but a myth, but that didn't explain the occasional disappearances of beggars or the discovery of open, empty graves in one of the city's cemeteries from time to time.
Anyway, the weasel-faced man continued, apparently oblivious of the stir he'd caused. He told me that if you weren't found or dusted in 2 days' time, I'd be walking Silence Fields myself. Real suspicious bastard he was.
Several people in the audience hissed at his use of the god's proper name. It was widely believed that to use the god of death's name was to draw his attention, or the attention of his followers, on yourself and those around you. Aaron thought it was a crock of shit, but he avoided saying it just the same. Only a fool sticks his hand in the snake pit unless he's certain it's empty.
So you told him, he said, frowning.
Lucius swallowed hard.
I had to, man. I didn't have a choice, don't you see that?
What was his name? The weasel face twisted in confusion.
Whose name?
Aaron grabbed a hold of the front of the man's wine-stained shirt and shook him, ignoring the squeals and whimpers.
The man. The man who put the hit out on me and the girl. What was his keeper-cursed name?
Lucius broke into a coughing fit. When he finished, snot hung from his nose, and he wiped his arm across it unconsciously.
His name was Aster, he said, his voice whiny, that of a man getting punished for no good reason. Aster Kalin said it like it was a name a man would kill to have too.
Aaron glanced back at Ardina, but she shook her head to indicate she'd never heard of him.
Damn.
He turned back to Lucius. And where were the men supposed to meet this Aster Kalin when they killed me? Where was the payoff?
It was at an inn, all right? An inn on Dockside, called, the Blind Man's Mermaid. Yeah, that was it. Said for them to come and ask for Aster, and he'd take care of them.
The sellsword nodded slowly.
And just what in the name of all the gods is going on here?
A deep, angry woman's shout came from somewhere in the crowd, and in an instant, everything grew silent. The singer stopped singing, the whisperers stopped whispering, the drunks kept drinking, but they did so quietly.
Shit.
Aaron took a slow, deep breath and turned to see the crowd of people scattering, as if an army of city guards had just marched into the building. In the suddenly empty space walked a heavy-set woman in a crimson dress that had no doubt cost a small fortune. Ruby rings covered her fingers, glittering in the light like motes of fire. She ran a hand through red hair that had once been brighter than her jewelry, but now held several grey streaks. The skin around the woman's mouth and eyes held the wrinkles Aaron's mom had once called smile lines. She wasn't smiling now. Her face was drawn down in anger, and members of the crowd were bumping into each other in their haste to get as far out of her way as possible. Aaron didn't blame them. The woman had such a strong presence, such a powerful personality, that he himself was half convinced that the only reason why he didn't burst into flame from her look was that she thought it would be an inadequate punishment. Altogether, she was an intimidating woman, even more intimidating, in fact, than the four men that followed behind her, cudgels in hand, threatening scowls well in place. She stopped a few paces away from him, taking in the two men on the floor with an intelligent eye that the sellsword knew from experience missed nothing.
Silent, she said.
He tipped his head respectfully, his expression grim.
May?
Just what in Mariana's name do you think you're doing? Mariana was the goddess of vengeance and retribution, and he wasn't particularly comforted by May's use of her name.
Talking with an old friend.
May stared past him.
Do all of your friends end conversations with you unconscious? If so, it's a wonder you have any left.
Aaron glanced back and saw Lucius lying across the table where he'd left him. The bastard fainted. He turned back to May with a shrug.
he never could hold his drink.
The slightest smile flickered on the woman's face for an instant, and then was gone. She turned to the men behind her, revealing a ruby earring that sparkled in the low light of the room like living fire.
"Take him to the back room."
She turned to the gathered crowd.
"Oh, has someone started a show of which I'm unaware, or is it my beauty that captivates you so?"
The men and women in the crowd nodded vigorously, as if a knife were being held to their throat, and shot uncertain glances at one another.
"Well then," May said expectantly, and as if on cue, the singer broke out into song, and in moments the room was again buzzing with drunken laughter and flirting, though obviously forced.
He sighed and gestured at the princess and the chamberlain.
"Might as well bring them along. They're with me."
Adina opened her mouth to launch what would have no doubt been a series of curses at Aaron, but snapped it shut as one of the guards approached and grabbed her by the arm. May nodded to the guards, and the club's patrons watched them as if they were men headed to the gallows as they were led through the smoke-hazed club into a small, richly furnished and decorated back room, May's office. The door slammed shut behind them with ringing finality. The guards sat them down in three of four chairs that faced a large, oaken desk and took up positions behind them. May walked over to the chair behind the desk and sank into its red cushion, letting out a sigh of relief as she did.
"Now then," she said, the anger and threat of vengeance that had filled her voice in the main room nowhere in evidence. "Tell me, Silent, what's happened?"
Out of the corner of his eye, Aaron could see the princess and the chamberlain looking confusedly between him and May, but he paid it no attention.
"Someone's put a hit out on me," he said bluntly.
May nodded.
"So I've heard."
No surprise there. May was one of the most powerful people in the Downs, had been for years. In a place like the Downs, information was often more valuable than gold, and May was plenty rich in both. In all the years he had known her, he'd never seen her taken by surprise.
"Still, it's not like it's the first time, is it?" she said, smiling slightly.
"A man in your profession has a way of making enemies and losing friends." She gestured to one of the guards, and the man poured Demetra a drink of wine. She frowned at him.
"Never before has a hit forced you to come into my club and make a scene, tearing up the place and scaring my customers."
She waited a moment for him to answer. When he didn't, she sighed heavily.
"You've put me in an awkward situation. You know that, don't you?"
She was right, of course. Letting someone come into her club and tear it up without being punished would be seen as weakness, and the citizens of the Downs, specifically the crime lords, pounced at any sign of weakness quicker than wolves on a wounded deer.
He nodded.
"I know. I'd say I was sorry, but it wouldn't mean much. This time isn't like the others. I had some questions that needed answers, and I had reason to believe that Lucius had them."
May's face twisted in disgust.
"That slime always has answers. Whether they're true or not, now that's a different story. A man would have to be pretty desperate to come to him for help."
Aaron let the silence speak for itself.
"So," May ventured, after several seconds had passed.
"Who is it this time? An ex-employer? One of the bosses? I hear Grinner is still angry at you for that last stunt of yours. And Hale has always hated you."
Aaron shook his head.
"I can handle Grinner and Hale. No, it wasn't either of them."
May shrugged, as if the two bosses, possibly the most powerful men in the Downs, were none of her concern.
"If anyone can, it's her," Aaron thought.
It was well known that May was one of the richest people in the Downs, if not the richest. But more importantly, she was also one of the most resourceful. The bosses had tried to move in on her before, several times in fact, but they had always lived to regret it, while May herself continued to prosper. She liked to claim that she was nothing more than a simple club owner, but Aaron had come to believe that she was possibly the most powerful person in the Downs. Powerful enough, he thought, that if she bent herself to it, she could have the entire Downs, Hale and Grinner included, bowing to her within a year. But he would never tell her that. The last man who had received such a tongue-lashing that Aaron would be surprised if the man could sit down even still, though the incident was years gone. It had been one of the few times he'd ever seen May angry, and he'd resolved a long time ago never to mention it to her, though he didn't understand it. His father had once told him that every man, woman, and child sought something. For some it might be fame, for others power or money, but there was always something. Oftentimes the people didn't know what it was themselves, but his father had claimed that you could not truly know someone, or yourself, until you learned what that something was. For May, it clearly wasn't power, and for at least the 100th time since he'd met her, Aaron wondered what it was. If it's not one of the bosses, then who? May asked, her voice bringing his thoughts back to the present. He considered not telling her, that it might be safer for her not to know before deciding it didn't matter. She would learn of it, one way or another. May always did. Belgarin. She whistled, her eyes wide.
What did you do? Sleep with his daughter or something?
Despite her effort at levity, she twisted one of the rings around her finger. He'd seen her use the gesture before, when she was nervous or scared. Unlike the rest of the jewelry she wore, the ring was plain, tarnished silver, without ornamentation or device. She changed her other jewelry regularly, but the ring was always there, always waiting for her to touch. He'd asked her about it once. The silence that followed had been more threatening than the calm before a thunderstorm, and he'd quickly changed the subject. He had not asked again. As far as I know, he said in response to her question, he doesn't have one.
Son, then?
He frowned, and the heavy-set woman laughed. Fine, fine, just a little joke between friends. But surely you must be kidding. I like you, Silent. I'm one of the few people who does, and you're probably the best at your job. I know you've charged me enough in the past that you damn sure better be. But you're nothing more than an ant to a man like Belgarin. I mean, keep his lantern, Silent. The man has thousands at his command. Why would he even bother to waste his time worrying about you? Because I saw his brother die. Because I know that he killed him. Because the princess, his younger sister, decided to get me involved and is counting on me to save the Keeper-Cursed Kingdom. I can't tell you that. It was the large woman's turn to frown, and when she spoke, her voice was lightly scolding. Aaron, listen. You've never kept anything from me before. Why start now?
It's different now.
How?
Because if I told you everything I know, I wouldn't be the only one on Belgarin's list. I like you, May, and you're a damn fine club owner. A fine dresser, too, come to that. But if you show up on Belgarin's list, he'll crush you like a bug. A charming, interesting bug, but a bug nonetheless. The woman smiled, clearly flattered, and put a hand across her chest.
Ah, pierced with my own blade. Well done. She turned and frowned at Adina and Grile. And how are these two involved?
I can't tell you that.
May let out a deep, unhappy sigh.
I don't like this, Aaron.
Not one bit. Secrets are dangerous.
I don't like it either. And secrets may be dangerous, but this truth can kill.
He met her gaze and held it.
I need you to trust me, May.
Whether he told her or not, he knew that if she wanted, May would be able to find out everything, and he couldn't have that. She might be powerful in the Downs, but Aaron knew that even she would stand no chance against Belgarin should the man decide she was in his way. I need you to leave this alone. She studied him for several tense moments with a thoughtful frown. Finally, she nodded, though reluctantly. I trust you, Aaron, but I still don't like it. She held up a hand to silence him. Fine, fine, I won't look into it. You have my word. Now tell me what I can do. He nodded, satisfied. It was another oddity about May that she was one of the few people in the Downs who, when they gave their word, kept it. I need to get to an inn called the Blind Man's Mermaid. Have you heard of it? May laughed.
The Mermaid? Of course. A dump of a place. Nothing like the rest. Old ale and older women. A man could catch his death there.
He thought of the man Aster, who'd put a price on his head. The man who, if Lucius had told the truth, and he was certain he had, for this at least, was staying at the Mermaid. That's the idea, he said, struggling to keep his anger in check. Anyway, I need to get there. The club owner watched him for a moment, waiting for him to continue. When he didn't, she laughed. "Aaron, I'm happy to do you a favor, and I realize that this dress makes me look intimidating, but despite the rumors, I'm no goddess, and I'm certainly not strong enough to carry you all the way to Dockside." He grinned, despite himself. "Well, it was worth a shot. What I mean to say is, do you know a way of getting there without being seen? I'm a little more popular than I'd like right now." May scoffed. "Of course I do." She paused for a minute, eyeing him. "But are you sure? Why don't you just stay here, Aaron? You and your friends?" She indicated the others with a ring-bedecked hand, a princess granting a favor to one of her people. "I can hide you in the rest. Belgarin's troops would never find you." He shook his head. "They would, May. You know they would. And if Belgarin learned that you were hiding me, he wouldn't just be after me anymore. I have to go. It's better this way." She frowned. "If you say." "I do." "Very well, then," she said, and then her face twisted into a smile that made him uncomfortable. "You need to get there without being seen," you said. "I think I know the perfect way. Come, I will have one of my men show you." Chapter 9. Aaron sighed as he stepped off the ladder. Overhead, he could hear the laughter of the man May had tasked with leading them as he slid the cover back in place. "You've got to be kidding," Adina said beside him. He shook his head in wonderment. Despite the thick darkness that surrounded them, a darkness so complete that he couldn't see the chamberlain or the princess, even though they stood right beside him. There could be no doubt as to where they were. The smell that assaulted his nostrils, rank and cloying, made sure of that. "A sewer," he grunted. "Why am I not surprised? This is the safest way?" Grill asked, incredulous, his voice disgusted. Aaron shrugged in the darkness. "Possibly. Of course, there was probably another route that would have worked equally well, and not had the atmosphere of this one. I suspect this is May's way of getting back at me for the scene I caused at the rest." "Yeah, what was that back there?" Adina asked angrily. "Those men could have beaten you half to death, and for what? A name and a place? I'm no soldier, and I may not have a lot of experience in this sort of thing, but it seems rather stupid to head straight to the man who put a hit on you. Do you think he'll pay you before he kills us? We do better to get out of Avarest as quickly as possible. We must make it to Baresh before Belgarin does, or all is lost. If you ask me, the princess is right, sir. Better to—" "I didn't ask you," Aaron growled. "Either of you. Besides, it wasn't much of a choice. In the Downs, if you start letting people get away with crossing you, it won't be long until you wake up dead." Grail coughed politely. "That doesn't really—" "Not another word out of you." Aaron reached into the pocket of his trousers and withdrew the flint and tinder May had given him. "Hold that torch close." He struck a spark, then another, and the oil-soaked torch sprang to life with a fitful, sputtering fire. Examining his surroundings in the orange glow of the torch, he was surprised by how large the tunnel was. The 3-foot walkway they were on extended in both directions as far as he could see, disappearing into the darkness. An identical walkway ran the length of the opposite side of the tunnel. Between the two, a river of waste and filth flowed past. He set his jaw and turned away from it, examining the stone at his feet instead. It, as well as the wall beside him, was covered with a green, slimy substance, the origins of which he dared not consider too closely. Clenching his jaws, trying unsuccessfully to ignore the foul odor that was so thick he could taste it, he turned to the others. Their faces were pale and sick-looking in the torchlight. "Come on," he said. "There's no hope for it. The sooner started, the sooner done." He started off at a slow walk, careful not to lose his balance on the slippery substance that covered the walkway. It had been a shitty day so far. The last thing he needed was to take a swim in the River Brown. He almost gagged at the thought as Adina fell into step beside him. In the torchlight, he saw that her lips were pressed into a thin white line. "She's angry with you," Co said. "Oh," he thought back, "I would never have guessed." The orb either didn't notice his sarcasm or chose to ignore it. "She is. She's a princess, not used to being talked to in such a way. If you can't show her respect, you would at least do well to not go out of your way to antagonize her. Aaron grunted. She's been pissed since Maze, and the gods alone know why. Besides, what makes you think I want advice from a glowing bug? I am not a bug, Ko hissed in his mind. He laughed, and Adina turned and glared at him before turning away. Great. Now she thinks I'm laughing at her, he thought with a sigh. Women. As for your question from earlier, he said in hopes of making amends, we're going to meet this Aster Kalin because I believe it's the safest thing to do. Adina scoffed. Safe? Delivering ourselves to the man who's offering a purse of gold for our heads? You've a funny idea of safe. No, not funny. Stupid. What's more, she continued, her voice troubled, I've never heard of this man, Aster Kalin, and I've made it my business to know all of my brother's top men. So the man has chosen to go by a different identity, Aaron said, shrugging. That's not surprising. After all, Belgarin wouldn't want to be linked to Elidan's death. The princess frowned. Perhaps, but I'm not so sure. This doesn't feel like Belgarin's work to me. With Afasia and Geoffrey, Belgarin was discreet. It was not until later that we discovered he'd been behind it. It doesn't seem like him to be so open about hiring a hit on someone. Aaron shrugged as he continued forward. It wasn't as if he didn't have enough to worry about, what with the most powerful man in all of Tel Rhea putting a hit on him. If this Aster Kalin really didn't work for Belgarin, but was after him on his own... No, that didn't make any sense. It had to be one of Belgarin's schemes. What other reason would the man have to want him dead? Perhaps your brother has decided that discretion is no longer so important, he said. But whatever the reason is, it doesn't matter. Your brother's man or not, Aster will soon know that the hit failed. He'll be expecting us to run to the nearest gate or ship as fast as our feet will carry us. Which, of course, would be absurd, she said, her voice thick with sarcasm. He gritted his teeth, struggling to keep his temper. It will do us no good to stumble into the pit of vipers ahead in an effort to avoid the garden snake behind. He paused to sidestep a crumbled section of walkway, wincing as he brushed against the stinking film on the wall. Besides, I like knowing what I'm up against. Good reasons both, Ko said in his head. Glad to have your approval, Firefly. Good reasons, the Virtue repeated. But not your reason. Not all of it, anyway. Stop poking around in there, he thought back sharply. Still, she was right. It was true that he did think it smarter to surprise the man. After all, what men Aster commanded would no doubt be out searching for Aaron and the others in force, leaving few to protect the man himself. Better to surprise him, to act instead of react. His father had told him once that predictability was a commander's worst nightmare, and he believed it. It was the right thing to do, the smart thing, and a sellsword didn't survive long in the Downs without doing the smart thing. It was a good reason, but the orb was right. It wasn't all of it. Mostly, he was just pissed off. He'd been chased halfway across the Downs, taken an arrow in the leg, and was currently slinking through a gods-blasted sewer, all because some pompous bastard had walked into the Downs, the closest thing he had to a home, and started waving money around. "Watch out!" Adina shouted, grabbing the back of his shirt and jerking him back. Glancing down, he saw that the walkway had split off, and wrapped up as he'd been in his own thoughts, his own anger, he'd very nearly stepped off into the river of human waste that rushed past beneath them. He swallowed hard. "Thanks." "Don't thank me," the princess said, frowning in the torchlight. "I'm just your employer, here to make sure you do the job instead of bathing in muck, no matter how much I'd enjoy watching." He frowned. Her jaw was set, and her eyes met his in silent challenge. If looks could kill, he thought uncomfortably, Belgarin would have one less sellsword to worry about. "Don't worry," he said, trying on what he hoped was a placating smile. "I'll finish the job. I always do. Ask May or Celeste, they'll tell you." "I'm sure," she almost snarled, glancing at the map May had given them. "The directions say this way." She set off down the left branch purposefully, following the direction of the river. He stared at her back for several confused moments as the Chamberlain waddled past him. He'd only meant to reassure her, but if anything, she was even angrier than she had been. He took a deep breath, grimacing at the foul smell that rushed through his nostrils, and started out after the others. After what felt like an eternity travelling down the slime-encrusted walkway, the orange glow of the torch revealing shadows of unrecognizable debris carried along by the river of sewage, the princess finally came to a stop. "This is supposed to be it." Aaron nodded and tossed the low-burning torch into the river. "Stay here. I'll call for you." He started up the ladder without bothering to wait for a response from either of them. If May's sources were right, and they always were, then the ladder should lead to an empty warehouse on Dockside. Still, with each rung of the ladder, his anxiety grew. 5,000 gold was a lot of money. He'd known May for a long time, and she was one of the few people who he might actually consider a friend. But anyone who'd ever met the club owner knew that she had expensive tastes. 5,000 gold would buy a lot of dresses. He reached the top and hesitated, his hand on the latch. "Do you trust no one?" Ko asked, incredulous, reading his thoughts. "If she'd wanted to betray you, why would she not do it at the Rest, while you were surrounded by her men?" "You're right," he thought. "It doesn't make sense. Still, people don't always do what makes sense, do they?" The sound of a long-suffering sigh filled his mind. "You have to trust someone sometime." "Is everything all right?" Adina asked from below. "Fine," he shouted down. He pulled on the latch, grunting as the rusted clasp resisted. Finally, the metal cover slid aside, and he crawled up and into the room. Once in, he blinked in the light of a lantern. The place was supposed to have been empty. He drew his blades and scanned his surroundings. Around him, shadows cast by the flame of the lantern's candle danced and shifted ominously. In the low light, he could just make out piles of debris where the roof had fallen in, and no one had bothered to remove it. He could see the stars shining overhead through the holes where the tiles had been, and a thin layer of dust coated everything. Everything that was, except for the footprints that led to the small table where the lantern had been placed, and then disappeared into the gloom. An abandoned warehouse, then, like May had said. So why the light? He backed up to where the lantern sat on an old wooden table. Judging by how far the candle had burned down, it couldn't have been lit for much more than half an hour. So someone had been here recently. Someone that, for all he knew, could even now be lurking in the shadows, waiting for the best moment to strike. The space between his shoulder blades itching in anticipation, he glanced at the lantern again and noticed a scrap of paper beneath it. Warily, scanning the shadows around him, he sheathed one of his blades, moved the light aside, and snatched up the note. "Silent, I hope you enjoyed your journey through the sewers. I imagine it was interesting. Consider us even for the trouble you caused me. I don't know what you're up against, but be careful. I'd hate to lose you. Celeste is a good woman, but she plays a terrible hand of cards. I suspect you won't want to hang around in Avarest for long. Under the table is a box I've prepared for you. Inside are orders bearing my seal. Bring them to the docks, to a captain named Leomin. He is a strange sort, but has proven reliable in the past. He will see you away from the city. The box also contains your payment for the next job I'll ask of you when you return. Be safe, and may Illidan's dice always roll in your favor. P.S. The princess is as beautiful in person as I'd heard. Keep her safe. I think she fancies you. M. Aaron smiled and shook his head, suddenly ashamed for his distrust of the club owner. "Thank you, May," he muttered. It didn't surprise him that May had discovered the princess's identity. If anything, he'd have been surprised if she hadn't. What did surprise him, however, was how wrong she was about Adina. "Fancies me," he barked a laugh. "Maybe she'd fancy sticking a knife in me. I'd say that's about it."
"The two are not mutually exclusive," Ko said. Pointedly ignoring the virtue, Aaron reached under the table and withdrew the paper and a sack heavy with far more coins than any job he'd ever done for May before. Secreting both under his tunic, he was starting back to the hatch when Adina's head poked over the top. He frowned as he watched her climb into the room, followed by a panting, red-faced Grile. "I thought I told you to wait until I made sure it was safe." The princess shrugged. "Either it was, or it wasn't. If it wasn't, and men were waiting on us, what would stop them from coming down the ladder after us?
She met his eyes challengingly. "I will not die in a sewer." He turned to the chamberlain.
"And you?"
The man straightened and raised his chin, his attempts at a confident, capable appearance undermined by the disheveled state of his clothes and his red, sweaty face.
"I will not let the princess venture into danger alone."
Aaron repressed the smile that was threatening to come. The man had shown courage coming after her, more courage than most servants would, and laughing at him now would wound him to no purpose. He noticed the princess frowning toward the chamberlain, and realized that she must not like the idea that she needed looking after. Aaron nodded to the panting chamberlain.
"Well done."
"Thank you, sir," Grail said, beaming with obvious pleasure. He smiled, then caught himself.
"What in the name of Silence Fields? What do I care if the man feels good?"
His smile soured into a frown.
"Co!"
"Yes?" the virtue asked, innocently.
"Stop screwing around in there."
The orb's voice was all offended dignity.
"I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about."
"A question, Firefly."
"Yes?"
"When that arrow got me in the leg, did you feel it?"
"Of course," the orb answered immediately.
"We are bonded. I am compassion after all."
"Why do you—"
"Ow!" Aaron grinned past the pain as he looked down at the red welt growing on his arm where he'd pinched himself.
"Don't test me, lightning bug," he thought, satisfied.
"Are you okay?" He turned to see Adina staring at him strangely.
Right. Let's go."
They walked through rows of dusty, empty shelves that reached nearly to the ceiling, stepping over or ducking under pieces of crumbled roof or fallen shelves where they could, and having to backtrack and take another path more than once when the debris proved too large. Aaron was half convinced they were going to spend the rest of their lives navigating the deteriorating maze when finally they arrived at the door. Stepping outside, he grunted. The smell here was, in its own way, no better than that of the sewer. The unmistakable tang of rotten fish permeated the air, made somehow worse by the salty ocean breeze. Night had come while they traversed the underground passages, but dockside was filled with sailors staggering drunkenly down the streets, laughing, talking, and more often than not, groping awkwardly at the hired women on their arms, enjoying their shore leave before they set out on the sea once more. The masses of people surrounding them should have made Aaron feel more secure, but they did not. Instead, he felt woefully, terribly vulnerable out in the open, and it seemed to him as if everyone glanced at him and the other two for longer than normal. Possible assassins out to make some coin, or just his imagination running away with him. He tried to reassure himself that the people around him were nothing but the usual Downs fare. Thieves and opportunists, whores and beggars, sailors and slumming nobles, all out for a good time. Many of them were criminals, sure, and if not honest, at least predictable. Besides, none of them seemed to have the look of hired killers. The problem was, the few hired killers did. He had to fight the temptation to draw his sword as they wound their way through the press of bodies. Though the passers-by appeared innocent enough, well, maybe not innocent, this was the Downs after all. Any one of them might get it in their mind to make a quick 5,000 coins. "Come on." He pushed his way through the crowd, working his way down the lane, his hand staying close to the sheathed sword on his back, covered as it was by his cloak. After a time, he looked back to make sure that Adina and the chamberlain were still with him. Their faces were pale, their expressions taut. Apparently they, too, had grasped their vulnerability. He grunted as someone bumped into him from behind.
"Excuse me, sir," a voice murmured.
He grasped the arm stealthily pawing under his tunic and squeezed, hard.
"I'm sorry,"
the owner of the hand squeaked. He looked down and saw a youth no older than 13 summers staring back at him, his expression a mask of pain. The boy's face was covered in dirt, and his shirt and trousers were torn and ragged. He looked at the sellsword with wide, desperate eyes.
"I'm sorry, mister. I'm really sorry. My mom is sick. We don't have the money to buy the—"
Aaron squeezed harder. "Don't tempt me, kid." In an instant, the innocent bewilderment left the kid's face, and his eyes took on a look much too jaded for one so young. True, the pity routine had been an act, but it was obvious by the kid's emaciated frame, by the look of his haggard face, and the way he swayed slightly on his feet, that he was starving. Aaron stared at the boy for a moment, then shook his head.
"You didn't bump hard enough, kid," he said, still gripping the boy's wrist. "Better to hit a man hard enough that he's worried more about falling on his ass than he is about his coins." The youth opened his mouth to speak, no doubt planning to launch into a scathing comment on how he didn't need anyone's help, on how he was better on his own. Aaron knew them all. He'd made them often enough himself. But the kid must have seen something in his stare because his jaw snapped shut, and he nodded grudgingly. The sellsword reached for his purse for a few coins, paused to make sure that it was his idea, not some damn glowing orbs, decided that it probably wasn't, but gave them to the kid anyway. "I don't expect you to stop stealing, boy," he said, meeting the youth's eyes, "but I do expect you to get better. Next time, I don't want to know a thing until I reach for a coin and come up empty. You hear me?" The boy paused uncertainly. After a moment, he smiled, and the coins vanished into his ripped and faded tunic. "Sure thing, mister. Next time, you'll never know what hit you." Aaron nodded. "I expect nothing less." Adina looked at him reproachfully as the kid hurried off into the crowd. "What was that all about? You probably just helped make that kid into a thief for the rest of his life." Aaron turned and met her eyes, and when he spoke, his voice was hard. "Maybe, but he won't go hungry anymore. It's hard to worry about morality when your stomach's cramping for lack of food, and you sleep in the streets every night. I don't expect you to understand." She frowned. "That doesn't mean that you should make yourself part of the problem. He could do something good with his life. He could grow up to be a soldier instead of a thief who lives off others' misery." The sellsword barked a laugh. "If we're breathing, we're part of the problem, princess. And don't talk to me about the nobility of being a soldier. There's nothing noble about cutting men down or dying fighting for some damn fool that decided the chair he was sitting in ought to be a throne instead." Chapter 10 Adina was just beginning to respond when Aaron turned and headed into the crowd, the stiff set of his shoulders making it obvious that he didn't want to talk about it any more. "If we're breathing, we're part of the problem, princess." "We don't have to be," she whispered after him with a sigh. She turned to make sure the Chamberlain was next to her, before heading off after the sellsword. "What happened to you, Aaron, to make you so bitter?" Thinking of the kid brought to mind memories of her own childhood. True, it had been different than most, but it still had its own hazards, its own lessons. She was the youngest of her father's children. When she was still playing with dolls, her other siblings were grown. Her brothers fighting in tournaments, her sisters marrying to seal alliances with some of the land's more powerful nobles. All except Aphasia. The thought of her sister, murdered by her own brother, sent a pang of grief through her. Elidan had always been kind to her, treating her sweetly, but it had been her sister, Aphasia, with whom she'd spent the majority of her childhood. She remembered the way her sister had looked then. Raven black hair, always in a tangle, a constant source of frustration for their nursemaid, Gertrude, and brown eyes so dark they were almost the color of midnight. Most of all, she remembered the mischievous glint in those dark eyes, the look that often presaged a harsh scolding from their nurse. A sad smile of loss crept its way onto her face at the memory. Her sister had always been wild, always looking for a thrill despite the consequences. At the time, Adina had believed Aphasia to be the embodiment of everything she was not. Courage, daring, and recklessness. Small wonder, then, that she had looked up to her so much. Considering her sister's bent for doing things she'd been expressly told not to, it was no surprise when her sister had begun to take Adina on trips to the dungeon. Adina had not wanted to go, had not wanted to brave the stares of the prisoners, the leers and the shouts, the memory of which often kept her awake at night. But as strong as that desire had been, the desire not to disappoint her sister had been stronger, and so in the end, she had gone. Aphasia had enjoyed taunting the prisoners, throwing stale bread at them, or calling them cowards, no matter whether they were thieves, rapists, or murderers. She shook her head wonderingly at the memory, how foolish they had been. She'd gone, true, but she'd always been too scared to join in Aphasia's taunts. Instead, she would sit back and watch, quietly terrified, sure that somehow the men would break through their cells and get her. They never did, of course, and eventually, despite her fear, she began to notice similarities between them. There was something in their eyes, in the set of their jaws, that said
they didn't regret what they'd done, that they'd do it again if given the chance. Even when they tugged on their bars, shouting for mercy, their faces twisted in wretched